Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Sea, air, land, infrastructure for a minimum of 30 days, and then we can extend that. He's absolutely right. The president has this one right on the money. And that's where we want to go to. And when you look at everything the Ukrainians are willing to work with, now it's over to the Russians, over to Putin. Okay, we've got one side. Now you need to come up the other side, and I think we're close.
Well, the world saw an image of the president of Ukraine sitting down with the president of the United States, Donald Trump, in a big, big ornate room at the Pope's funeral recently. And Jim Carafano is here to talk about world events with us. Jim, thanks for being here.
You know, I think that that photo is going to be one of the iconic pictures of the 21st century. And it says so much about Donald Trump. And I think something that people just don't appreciate. Look, Trump doesn't like Zelensky. I mean, just personally, on a personal level, it's very clear that he did not warm up to him the way he's warmed up to leaders like Modi and Malay and Maloney. But the one thing that Donald Trump has always been consistent with, first term, second term, it doesn't matter, is, you know, Trump has instincts, but when he believes that it's important for the country, it doesn't matter if he likes it or not, if it's his instinct or not, he's going to do the thing that's in the best interest of the country. And it is in the best interest of the country to try to end this war and to support a free and independent Ukraine. And so he will sit down with this man knee to knee because he knows that it's the right thing to do. And to be honest with you, and I am a religious person, so what can I say? The fact that that happened in the panic, where it did in the cathedral really suggests to me that this country has been blessed by God. We have a leader. He may not be perfect. He may not say everything you like. He may not even always be right. But I'll tell you one thing is, he is there for one reason, which is to take care of the American people to the best of his abilities, and we are blessed to have that.
Yeah, you're right. That is a moment in time, especially depending on how this thing plays out, that if people can look to that and say, wow, things really changed after that conversation. Maybe there was some divine intervention going on here. But, Jim, do you think that there's a point at which, you know, like you said, he doesn't really like Zelensky. He definitely doesn't like Putin. Is there a point at which he says, okay, then you guys solve it, because I keep trying to bring you to the table and you're not doing anything?
Well, I mean, you can't walk away from Ukraine. And I think it's very clear that the U.S. isn't going to do that because it's not in our interest to do that. It's not in our interest to see Putin take over Ukraine, to see all those people die, to see Europe completely destabilized, to see that all of Europe would be an open, you know, open running ground for Russia and China. There's no benefit to us for that happens. So that's unlikely, you know, particularly because it's actually not that big a lift for the United States. Look, we're not going to World War III. It's not going to be a nuclear war. The Europeans are actually picking up more of the responsibility. Ukrainians are building their own defense industry. They went from $1 billion a year to have a $15 billion a year defense industry already. It's not a heavy lift for us to continue to support Ukraine. And it is draining on the Russians. And it's not just Ukraine. What the president's doing, the price of oil, what he's doing to push back on the Chinese. and on the Iranians. And I'm just guessing that the phone call to North Korea saying, you guys, you probably want to stop doing this. I believe that phone call is coming. So I don't think there are good days ahead for the Russians.
Has Putin, to you, Jim, shown any sign that you're like, oh, there's a good sign that maybe he's starting to negotiate or back off, or maybe there's an end in sight?
Yeah, one thing. But I will tell you, Putin has I like Putin. I hate the guy, but he's always consistent. So Putin wants something for nothing, and he will continue to bluff and push and lie until he realizes he's nothing else to get, and then he might make a deal. But so I tell you one interesting tidbit, which to me might mean something, which is the Russians have started to move troops back up to the border with Finland. They basically took troops from everywhere to throw them into Ukraine. And so the fact that they're dispersing them again might suggest that they're giving up on Ukraine. But that's the only data point I have then.
Okay.
But you know, we'll see.
Jim Carafano is senior counselor to the President, E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Last time we were talking to you, Iran was a little bit more in the news than it has been the last week or so. Is there been any developments with the U.S. and Iran and the Middle East in general?
Look, I'm not super expecting the Iranians to come and make a deal because that the president was pretty clear. A deal is you give up your nuclear weapons program. I'm not sure the regime's willing to do that. They are really interested in the survival of the regime. I think it's much more likely that they hunker down and, you know, ride this out than they give up their nuclear program. That's not to say that they become a nuclear state. You have to remember, and something people really don't get, this is not about technical ability. Iran can be a nuclear power any day it wants to. All it has to do is say, I'm a nuclear weapons power. It has everything it needs to put a nuclear weapon together. It's a political decision. It's not a technical decision. So Iran would only make the decision to say, hey, I'm a nuclear power, when they believe that it was in their interest to do so. And I think the more pressure we put on them, the more likely they're saying, you know, there's no benefit for us to do this, because as soon as we do this, you know, that then we're done. You know, that threat is gone. So you know, I think the Ayatollahs are more likely to say, let's hold on to that card for now. And because the one thing we don't want to do is risk an attack from Israel or the United States. It was something that we're not prepared for. So that's my guess, but we'll see what happens.
This is a bigger picture question, but I remember even back during George W. Bush days, listening to both pundits and preachers saying, look, they're trying to wait out Iran. You know, there's war right in the Middle East, especially during G.W. Bush's term. But they're trying to wait out Iran because the people of the country don't like the leadership of the country. But here we are, this is roughly 20 years later, and it doesn't seem like that's ever happened.
Well, it is true that the people of Iran would be happy to see these yahoos gone, but they don't have the army. You know, the mullahs have the army. Look, we waited out Russia and the Soviets in the Cold War, and that took a really, really long time. So, honestly, waiting out is not a bad strategy as long as you can protect your interests. I mean, the problem with Biden is we weren't waiting out the Iranians. We were letting them run wild through the Middle East. They had Houthis bombing everybody. They had the Hamas attacking Israel. They had Hezbollah attacking Israel. I mean, they were setting the region on fire. That's not waiting out the Iranians. That's letting the lunatics out of the asylum.
Right.
So put the lunatics back in the asylum and then let them be loony.
You know, one of the things Trump says over and over and over, I mean, to the point that you're like, okay, I know, you've said it many, many times, is anytime they bring up Ukraine or Iran or Israel, he says, this would have never happened if I had been in office for the last 4 years. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind. And there's no question in my mind that all those enemies know there's a new sheriff in town. And they're just right now trying to figure out how to survive the next 3.5 years of Donald Trump. keeping their head down.
There's a clip that I think we played earlier today that it's Scott Bessent talking economically, but the same principle would apply, that he's using strategic uncertainty in the negotiations, which I guess that does affect national interests and foreign policy as well. But that seems to be Trump's MO across the board.
I don't think it's uncertain. I don't think there's any uncertainty to this. You know, the guy's got cards to play, and he's willing to throw them down. That's certain. You're making a bet. Is he going to throw that card down or not? You know, good luck with that, my friend. But I don't find any uncertainty in Trump's strategy at all.
Well, that would be the uncertainty, though, right? Is he going to call the bluff? That would be the.
You know, there's no uncertainty in poker because unless you're cheating, right? Because the rules are the rules, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's the same. It works the same way.
Let's move on to, I guess, a little bit more of a domestic front. Not quite here, but Canada had some elections yesterday. You know, this is a weird election, and a lot of people saying, yes, absolutely, Trump is the deciding factor in the Canadian election. True or false?
I don't know. It is true. I don't think Trump weakened the conservatives. What Trump helped do is he did unite the opposition, because rather than vote for a bunch of different candidates, they all piled on this guy. I mean, I think Canadian voters made a horrible mistake. But it's their decision. To the end, it's not Trump's fault. It's their fault. They made a bad decision. But I will say that, look, Canada is going to do the right thing in the end because it's sitting next to the United States and it really doesn't have a choice. So in the end, no matter who the Canadian prime minister is, they're going to be pragmatic about their relationship with the United States, just like the president of Mexico is in the end. Rhetoric, blah, blah, politics, your favorite taco sauce aside, doesn't matter. In the end, they're going to have to play ball with the United States because they really don't have a choice.
Jim, we're getting into a little bit economics here, but they all cross over so much. But has Trump really kind of cornered China? I mean, not China, but Canada in a way, China too, for that matter, that they really don't have a lot of options. Is he playing this wise enough that he's saying, look, I know what your options are. Here's what they are. You choose which one it is, but I've got you cornered.
Well, it's not Trump's fault they don't have any options. They basically, basically what they have is an export economy that's dependent on the United States, and which is fine as long as the United States buys stuff. Then they go off like a drunken sailor, and they waste everything in their economy. They don't develop it. They don't do the right policies, and they make themselves weak and completely dependent on us and on our largesse. We didn't put them in that situation. You know, it's just like you run up your credit cards. The credit card company didn't make you do that. You decided. And then you say, I have no options. And the credit card company's like, okay, you should have put all that stuff on a credit card.
Right, yeah. And since I mentioned China, let's talk about them too.
But Canada's pathetic, okay. Right? Here is a beautiful country with all the resources in the universe, and was actually one of the most liberal in a good sense, not best places to live in the world. And liberal governments ran the country into the ground, and then they vote to bring these guys back. It's just nuts.
So with China, similar situation, has he boxed them in? Or is it there's probably a lot more going on because China's so big?
Well, you know, look, China, Iran, and Russia all have one thing in common, which is their foreign policy is they'll only be better off in the world if we get rid of the United States. And when that's your only option, you're going to try to find a way to do that. So it doesn't matter how much your economy is crippled or ruined, or you can't do this, you can't. They're going to try to find a way to poke at us. This is exactly what the Soviets did up until the moment the Soviet Union collapsed. So don't, if you were tired of Rocky 1, 2, and 3, there's going to be a Rocky 4, 5, and 6 because some yahoo is going to get in the ring and try to punch your face in. That's just the reality of it. The Chinese are not going to stop being the Chinese.
Last question for you before I run out of time here, Jim Carafano. Is all of this blustering back and forth between the U.S. and pretty much any other nation saying, yeah, we're close to a deal. Oh, no, we're not close to a deal. We don't like what they're doing. We don't like each other. Is that all part of the process? I mean, are we really closer than we think we are?
Yeah, have you never been married before?
I have. My first wife will tell you all about it. I'm still married to her.
This is the way. Yeah, it's people are actually. This is what's called making a deal, which is you're both sides are trying to get the most out of it they can before they sign the bottom line. That's all.
Yeah.
I'd be disappointed in a country that didn't try to do that.
I was hoping to hear some big announcements here on day 100 of the Trump administration, but I guess we're not going to get any big trade deals today.
I think the big trade deal thing is irrelevant. I mean, I think he's already kind of. I mean, I think most of the uncertainty of the trade policy is already out there, and I think people have baked that in, and they know that in the end. We are resetting the global order. We're doing a new way of doing things, but the uncertainty of that the whole thing is going to collapse into the depression, I think, is over. So as a story, I think this is over. To me, this is like going and watching them change the oil in your car. I mean, it's important. It needs to get done. The car can't run without it. But that's not where the exciting things are going to happen in the world.
Yeah, we're not going to put the title of your interview as changing the oil in your car. We're going to say resetting the global order because that's much more exciting.
That'll get you more eyeballs.
Exactly. Jim Carafano, thank you so much for your time as usual and your expertise. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. And did you catch that, producers? That's a great title for that interview. Resetting the global order. It really is happening. I mean, we're joking, but... I heard somebody say, and it really stuck with me, that this is the biggest change in national and foreign policy since World War II. We are completely redoing our relationships with everybody in the world, and people will talk, just like we talk about World War II in an economic sense, we will talk about the Trump administration, probably even the second term of Trump, as that moment. Yeah. Oh, well, ever since Trump, blah, blah, blah. That's what economic conversations will look like in the future. Let's take a short break. We are connecting still, like, constantly with Annie Fry. We knew Jimmy was going to be here for that segment, but Annie is sending us content actively throughout this show because she's interviewing multiple lawmakers. She's already sat down with Senator Eric Schmidt. And are we good to go with that?
I think we can make that happen for next segment.
So I think we're going to play that interview that she just did a couple hours ago with Senator Eric Schmidt in Washington, D.C., right here on The Annie Fry Show next. Annie Fry, the host of The Annie Fry Show, is in Washington, D.C. just yesterday and today. She'll be back tomorrow, although we hope she makes it in for the show. She's coming in like at 10:30, so if there's any delay in flight, she's going to be walking in during her own show. I'll be ready to step in at the beginning. We'll see. That's going to be very, very late breaking, just like everything that's happening right now on the Annie Fry Show. In fact, Annie got a chance to sit down with Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt in Washington, D.C. Now, this happened right before we were set to go live. So I don't know that any of us have actually heard this yet. We're going to listen to it along with you. Here's Annie with Senator Eric Schmidt.
So we are sitting in Senator Eric Schmidt's office. And as I was saying, my adopted Senator Eric Schmidt, thank you for the time today.
Glad to have you as an adopted constituent and then here in the swamp, I guess. Right?
How much different is it? I don't know how often you've been coming to Washington, D.C. outside of course, being the Attorney General for the state of Missouri.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period.
That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Missouri, how familiar does Washington, D.C. feel for you compared to St. Louis, Missouri?
It's a foreign land. I really had not spent much time in D.C. at all because I was in, you know, in state politics and attorney general. We would come here for, you know, a big announcement or maybe some meetings or something when I was AG, but very much kind of like you were here, you know, maybe for a day or two and then you went back. So being here this amount of time, I think, is new. And when I was sworn in back 2 years ago, I think I had only been in the Capitol one time in my whole life.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so you get sworn.
Did you take a tour?
Yeah. Took a while to figure out where the bathrooms were. But my whole family came up and, it was just a really special day, the swearing in and all that. And, you know, being sworn in as the 2000th senator of all time on the dot, which is
really
kind of interesting.
So,
You know, being here now for a couple of years, you certainly know your way around a little bit more. And then being in the majority now has certainly changed things from my first 2 years. But I love this job, but I go back and forth every week. So
I was going to say, I see you travel a lot.
Yeah.
You go back to see your family.
Yeah.
I see you participating in your kids' events. I can't help but reflect when I'm here. I have four kids.
Yeah.
About what the lifestyle is and the demand of what you have to do to serve the people of the state of Missouri and balance that with the family. How do you do it?
That's the hardest part. Is, you know, my kids are, I have Steven who's 20 and special needs. I've talked about that a bunch. And then a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old daughter. So the most important job I'll ever have is being Jamie's husband and my kid's dad. So you just try to balance it all. So when I'm home, yeah, I'm like volleyball dad for Olivia and you know, helping Sophia with projects. She's a junior in high school. So I love that. And so I get up here as close to the first vote as I can on Monday. And then when we're done at the end of the week, I get back as fast as I can. So.
All right, let me ask you a dad question. You said it's the most important thing you do. And I'm saying this from personal experience last week. Kid is late on getting a project done. They need a late night trip to Walmart to get a poster board or something like that. Are you the dad that stays up and cares about that final grade and going to help make that come to fruition? Or is that like life lesson time?
No, I mean, I would help. I mean, I don't know if that's a weakness or a strength. I don't really
know.
I don't really know.
Because I'm like, the grade matters. You need
yes.
But at the same time, I'm like,
Yeah, I think, so I will help, but then there's a lesson that comes with that too. It's like, hey, you can't wait till the last minute on these things. Knowing, by the way, that I'm sure I did that a bunch. And then even as a practicing lawyer, I mean, deadlines exist because you know, that's the deadline, and usually you kind of wait until you get close to the deadline because the other thing's going on. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just try to be as present for them as possible. And I'm actually coming now to the very weird realization that, you know, my time with them in the house, at least the two girls, is limited.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be long before.
That's heavy.
It is. And, when they're young, you don't really, I didn't at least think about it in those terms. And so you just try to make the most of it. And I try to, you know, talk to them about what I do, but also try to, I don't make this job like everything at home. Like I can't do it. I watch Cardinal games and get around and visit with people. But I think you got to make sure that they know that they're your priority when you're there.
Yeah.
And so being present with them is really important to me. And I try not to like inundate their life with the political. I want them to have as normal of a life as possible. And they've done a really good job with it. You know, it's funny. They see the ads and all that stuff when you're running, and you don't really know how they're going to react to that.
But how do they react to it?
Well, they call them hate commercials, and they would say, "Dad, there's a lot of hate commercials about you right now."
Yeah.
But I'm their dad, and I don't. That's how they see me, and that's how I want them to see me. And so, you know, we have just normal dad-daughter conversations, and it's not really about this other stuff. So.
I get a little bit of that from being a public figure in the news media, that people don't like something I said, then they make a deal out of it, or. My husband can be a little more worked up about it than my kids, but they're old enough now too that they see some of it. And I just think it's another opportunity to teach your kids that, listen, not everyone's going to like you, but what do you stand for? And if you stand for something, they're going to be people who feel differently, and some people don't handle it well.
Yeah. And that's just kind of the deal. And you do things for the right reasons and make good decisions. And then, and I think honestly, my time as Attorney General probably, really drove that point home for me from a leadership perspective, because these were the COVID times, and it was just sort of like you still look back and you can't believe they're boarding up basketball hoops and you know, putting police tape around playgrounds.
Yeah.
And for me, I felt like even in the face of a lot of pressure to do otherwise, you know, on the mask mandates or the vaccine mandates, I mean, we really led the charge on that. And at the time, if you go back in time, that was controversial, and now everybody most people still see it for what it was, but that I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned there. I also think, just as a dad, you get people, there's the good and the bad, and you get people that certain, and I appreciate, say hello and thanks. And I think, you know, just handling yourself in those situations, because the kids, they're always watching, right? And so making sure you say thank you, and waiters and waitresses are yes sir and yes ma'am, and those are just, that's how I was brought up, and those are the kind of lessons I want to teach them. And it has nothing to do with politics,
way more important than politics. Yeah. Politics is so much downstream. I know we have limited time with you, so I want to talk to you about the 100 days mark for the president's administration. You've served under a Biden administration, and you've served under a Trump administration, and you know, I was at the press briefing this morning.
Congrats, by the way. That's kind of
wow.
Neat.
Yeah. That was wild. And Secretary Bessent was there, and if I had the opportunity to ask the question, I was going to ask him about the American dream, because I think boomers and the greatest generation had this idea of an American dream. Something changed. I was born in the 80s. I'm in my 40s now. I think that if the Trump administration gets the tax cuts made permanent, the DOGE cuts and spending reined in made permanent, and if the tariffs work out the way he says they are going to work out, that there's kind of a revival of an American dream that I don't think that millennials like me, I don't think they think about the American dream.
Yeah.
You think that the president is on his way to doing that?
I do. And I'm 49, so that's Gen X. That's what I want for my kids, right? Like look at what we were talking about for this, most of this interview so far.
Yeah.
It's really our kids and making
the
sure they have a bright future ahead, they can achieve things. And I do think that's what this administration was all about. I think seeing the previous 4 years, the direction we were headed, there's a reason why President Trump won the popular vote. There's a reason why he swept those battleground states, because he was talking about things that really resonated with real people. The bubble up here, the things that are like top of mind, it's generally not the case. When I go back home, people are not having the same conversations that they are here, I keep that with me. I think that fuels me every day to be that voice for the people in Missouri, like this common sense agenda. And that's what this is. So look, whether it's energy policy, no country in the history of the world has ever declared war on their own domestic energy supply. That's what Joe Biden did. No country really in the history of the world has opened up their border to just anybody unvetted, 15 million people here illegally. It was crazy. And I think what happened was these people who were generally writing white papers found their way into key decision-making positions in the Biden White House, and President Otto Penn was just, he wanted to kind of have a legacy as the next FDR. I mean, he talked about this, and it was the most radical administration we've ever seen. So really what President Trump is doing, I think it's hitting a reset. You've got these tax cuts that we need to make permanent. That would be a $4 trillion tax increase if we don't do that. He ran on that. He talked about energy. And also on trade policy, the reality is, after World War II, we had priorities. We wanted Western Europe and Japan to get back on their feet. So we were determined to beat Soviet communism. So they had certain advantages in trade deals and sort of things that we allowed to take place so that ultimately we would win the Cold War. After the Cold War, though, nothing changed. Those still unfair trade practices that inhibit our markets, our goods and their markets still exist. No president has had the courage to stand up and say, you know what, treat us fairly.
Yeah.
This is an outdated model. And I think when we do that, the net of all of this is going to be these trade barriers and unfair trade practices that other countries have just sort of done and gotten away with, they're going to come down. And so you've got energy policy, you've got regulatory reform, you've got trade policy and energy policy. All that stuff will matter for real people. There have been 90,000 factories that have left since NAFTA. And so I just think of the community that I grew up in, North St. Louis County. You know, it was very blue collar, overwhelmingly Democrat, by the way. These are just working folks that wanted a better life, and those jobs were gone.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity, I think, to bring some of those back and for more people in the working class, middle class, to share in the American dream.
Yeah.
You know, some of the really wealthy folks, they've had a good run, and it's just time, I think, for regular people, normal people, to have an opportunity. And you saw that in President Trump's first term, right? Mm-hmm. You saw wage... inflation-adjusted wage increases were higher than they've ever been, and I think we're going to get back to that.
Well, Senator Eric Schmidt, I'm very grateful for your time, and, you know, as we started this interview talking about our families and our kids, it's all about the future,
yeah.
And it's great to have a president that has an administration that is thinking about the future and, like you said, has the guts to do it, and senators like you who, in the majority, are helping get that done. So, thank you so much.
Hey, it's been fun.
I really appreciate
good to see
it.
You in person again.
Yep.
A little more off-the-radar stories here. A couple things. This one is purely clickbait, but I took the bait hard when I clicked on this. Jeff
As
Bridges teases Big Lebowski sequel decades after the cult classic premiered. You guys, Ethan, very good question for you, since you may have not even been alive when this movie came out. 1998, you weren't, were you?
No, I was not alive.
The Big Lebowski. You've never seen it?
I've never seen it, but I have heard plenty of people talk about it. I know several people that love it that I'd probably get in trouble for saying their names that they do love it.
Really? Why? Everybody loves this movie.
I don't know. Isn't it kind of inappropriate?
I mean, a little bit, but not...
It's not that bad?
No. Everything is inappropriate. This falls in the category of movies that are right in that wheelhouse.
Fair enough. But I do know some people that I may or may not have worked with at the ballpark that are big fans of this movie.
So Jeff Bridges, the headline, and it's such a clever headline, teases Big Lebowski sequel. Well, what he really said was Julianne Moore, who was also in that movie, and he's 75 now, they would fantasize about doing that movie. They would love to do it. But the Coen brothers are not going to do that. That's what he said. So the headline is, ooh, it could happen. The story is, it ain't going to happen.
Movie had a loaded cast, by the way.
Oh, it's huge. John Goodman.
Yeah.
Who's
John
Steve
Goodman.
Buscemi. Steve Buscemi. Yeah, that's
John Turturro. Is that how you say
it? Oh, that's
that?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sam Elliott.
Philip
Seymour Hoffman.
Who was he in that movie? I don't remember him.
Brandt.
I don't know who Brandt is, but... It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. People chiming in saying, absolutely, it's a classic. It really is a classic. It's a weird classic.
It is weird.
But it is a classic. Here's another one. Scientists say, well, this scientist says, the Big Bang Theory is all wrong. And he reveals how the universe really began. This is not a creationist article. I'm just warning you right now. It's still fully, you know, billions, eons of years old. he is saying that the new theory that he is proposing is that the cosmos grew through numerous rapid fire bursts rather than a single massive explosion. So a bunch of little bangs rather than a big bang. This alternative explanation published by Professor Richard Liu of the University of Alabama in Huntsville challenges one of the most foundational, long-standing theories in all of cosmology. Liu argues that each of these bursts, known as temporal singularities, blasted new matter and energy out into space, which became planets, stars, galaxies, and everything in between. The Big Bang Theory, by comparison, proposes that the universe began as an infinitely small hot point of densely packed matter and energy. Here's what I don't understand about this stuff, and it's probably more numerous than I can say here, is is the proposition that, because they're called temporal singularities, is the proposition that time didn't exist before the Big Bang? I don't know the answer to this, but that's what it seems to be saying, that there was no time as we know it before the Big Bang, right? Is that the scientific consensus?
I don't even know.
I don't know either. Somebody smarter than us, let us know if that's what
like
is
I've heard
commonly
that,
held.
That the Big Bang is really more an answer to where did the modern universe or you know the known universe come from. So the situation that we're in now, where did that come from? But it can't answer the question where did everything else come from, because matter, like what I don't remember what it says, but matter, which law this is, but matter can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change forms. And
yeah, I don't think they're saying that it was formed. They're just saying it was tightly packed.
Right. So that
and then exploded.
Right. So it like, according to that, it still had to exist in eternity past.
But what I don't understand is, does that mean, because oddly, I do understand enough to know that time is quantifiable, that if you, basic stuff here, but if you and I are moving at different speeds,
time
that
moves.
We experience time differently.
Yes.
And that time actually is different for us. And so if you were to go at the speed of light, naturally you would be time traveling in a sense, because time on Earth would be going a lot slower, or I guess faster than you would be. So you'd come back and 100 years would have gone by, but you're only traveling at the speed of light for a few minutes or whatever, that kind of thing. So time itself is not a constant, which is really interesting in and of itself. But I've never really grasped whether that they're saying that time started at the Big Bang. Like there was no time before the Big Bang. Ethan's like, oh, I decided to come in for this segment.
Listen, you said fun stuff, not physics.
All I'm going to read is Chris's comment that says, some say it wasn't a bang at all, more of a long fart.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Let's make a full segment out of that and make sure.
Annie's listening.
Annie's listening.
There's your title for
title that segment. It wasn't a Big Bang. It was more of a fart. All right. Since nobody has
the
any
Manny Fry show.
Since nobody has any clue what I'm talking about, here's another one. A mom has issued an urgent warning for people traveling with children in rideshares. First of all, rideshares? Have you done many Ubers?
No. Well, I mean, very few. I haven't done many.
Okay.
I have ridden in an Uber, but I've never booked one myself.
You know what's funny is that for a long time I drove Uber. I shouldn't say for time, but like a year
before you started here.
Actually, it was right into when I started here.
Was it like, did you like make decent money off of it?
Well, it was 2018-19 or 17-18, I can't remember, right around there. And I just thought, you know what? I was closing my television production company. Or we were just trying to figure out what to do with it. We weren't closing it, but we just were like, we're not doing anything.
Sure.
Let's figure out. And I wasn't doing anything else. And so I applied here because I just liked 97.1. And I had a history in radio and media. And in between when I got this job and when I was figuring out what to do with my company, there was probably 6 or 7 months that I was just floating. And so I decided to drive Uber. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. You do have to really commit to it to make a living doing it. Mm-hmm. You have to do it for pretty long hours. And I don't know how that's changed, because 2020 and inflation really changed everything. So and I know the prices of using Uber went up, so maybe it stayed consistent for the driver, but I don't know. But I know at that time, it was a great little in-between job for me, because it rolled with my schedule. I could be at the kids' stuff. Usually work it middays through evening or whatever, and then stop whenever I wanted to.
Were you the driver that was conversing with all of the people that you were taking around, or were you quiet or was it based kind of on what they wanted, or what was that like for you?
That's what I would do. I was such a good driver / host of my car. That
did you have the same car? Were you driving around the same car?
No. This was a little Ford Fiesta.
Ryan has lots of great Uber stories.
What a privilege it would have been to drive people around in that Mazda.
Mazda 5?
Yeah.
It seats more than the Fiesta did. I probably could have made a few more bucks.
Ryan rolls up and the person looks at the car and cancel.
Well, at the time, I don't know if this is true, but at the time, you could not Uber in a car that was over 10 years old. Mm-hmm. You had to have a car that was newer.
Is that a thing still?
They may have changed that because, again, COVID. people were driving cars way longer, and they probably still are, than they were. But yeah, I drove that little thing around, and if people got in my car, I would kind of read them. You know, do you want to talk? Do you not want to talk? And it was very easy to tell. They would get in the car and just say hi, and then they would go back to whatever they were doing, or they would just start talking to you. And it was real easy.
Now it's 15 years old.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So this story is that a mom has issued an urgent warning for people traveling with children in rideshares after an Uber driver accidentally drove away with her young daughter in the car.
Oh.
I can't, as a former driver, what the heck are you thinking? I guess if you just get in the mode and you're not thinking about it, because I don't think this driver was trying to do something wrong here. He just drove off. The mom shared her story in a lengthy post declaring that Uber, and she contacted Uber, and she was trying to, you know.
Sue.
I'm sure she's trying to sue him now. Why wouldn't you? she says, our exit plan with the driver had been communicated loudly and clearly right beside the driver. The shocked mom wrote in the post saying there was no language barrier or anything like that. She had the daughter in a car seat and said, hey, I'm going to get out of the car, go around to the other side and unbuckle it. Well, she didn't. She had a couple other kids in the car, too. They all got out. She walks around the back. Driver just takes off.
Oh, my gosh. Parents' worst nightmare.
Oh, can you imagine? And so she immediately tries contacting the driver. She tries contacting Uber. In an emergency, there was no real urgency to get that done. So they called Uber in a panic, refused to contact the driver, amazingly. So
they're suing Uber.
They provided police with a recent photo taken that morning, and then put out an Amber Alert. She says, my daughter was alone in the dark with a stranger, terrified and confused upon the police finally tracking them down over an hour later.
How stupid.
Man. The thing is, though, you can avoid doing that. You could have done something maybe differently, but I don't really blame the mom too much here. I wouldn't step out of that car without my kid.
I don't understand the part of Uber not being willing to contact the driver. How is that not viewed as an emergency?
From my experience, Uber is really slow to react because a lot of times people overreact.
Okay.
And they want you to solve their problem when really you should just solve it with the person in person. And if I back off a little bit, they'll solve it, and then they don't have to get involved. But with this one, you're like, look, my daughter is actively in an Uber by herself now.
You
that
cost
just drove
yourself
off.
A few hundred K there, probably.
You need to figure out what's going on. All right, Annie is in Washington, D.C., and she is sending us content. We have a lot for you in the 2 o'clock hour, so stick around.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, we got to run a business and we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because I think most of us, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.